What's going on, everybody? Welcome to episode 78 of the Strength Through Vulnerability podcast. Let's get into it. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode. As always, it is so good to be here with you. This week, I'm bringing to you an interview with Christine Rumpf, who works in marketing and lives with bipolar disorder. A topic that we haven't touched on in this show yet, and this show is over a year old, and it's about vulnerability and largely about mental health. So it's about damn time, all right? I'm excited. It was such a fun conversation. I think that it's going to be eye-opening for a lot of you who haven't lived with bipolar, and she also shares a lot of tips that are helpful whether you have bipolar disorder or not. So without further ado, let's get right into this interview. Christine, it is so nice to be talking to you again today. How are you doing today?
I'm great. Thank you. How are you? It's nice to be talking to you too.
I am doing pretty well. Stressful day at work for myself, but really good to be having this conversation now. Really grateful for your time and your willingness to come on the show. I don't think that I've had anybody on the show, and I forgive me any of my guests who maybe do have bipolar that I'm forgetting at the moment, but I don't think I've talked to anybody who who lives with bipolar disorder. And so I think you're going to be starting a whole new conversation on this podcast, which I'm pumped about.
Wow.
Yeah, this is big stuff. So
I'm still honored.
It's an honor to have you here. So to start it off, Christine, I would love to hear, when did you find out that you had bipolar disorder?
Sure. Yeah. So I would say that I was like officially diagnosed almost 20 years ago. But at that time, I was in my early 20s. But I would definitely say that looking back, I was probably around 13 when the symptoms started kind of happening. And then they got really bad and kind of came to a head when I was about 21. I was diagnosed about a year after that.
Gotcha. So for those of us who don't live with bipolar disorder and maybe don't know too much about it, what does that look, how does it impact your day-to-day life? What does that look like?
Yeah, sure. So I would say it's definitely been an evolution. When I was first diagnosed, when I was younger, the symptoms were very different than what they are now, 20 years later. I've been living with this for quite some time and have learned a lot of, ways to live with it, I guess, for lack of a better way to say it. But yeah, so when I was in my early 20s, I think that it was really like an emotional roller coaster, I would say, would be the biggest thing. It was, lots of tears, lots of crying, lots of being upset, and also a lot of not really knowing why. So it's a disease of your emotions, and you don't always have the right reactions to things. There's a lot of like underreacting or overreacting to, everyday things that happen in life. So for me, it was a lot of sadness. Some people, it might be come out in anger or violence or other ways that it manifests. But for me, it was sadness. There was, I think that was probably one of the biggest things that caused that red flag of something's not right.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Now, you bring that up and you said that, for you, sadness was the big emotion at play. For other people, it can be anger. Does it work in the realm of like what we would associate as positive emotions too? Like, would you have super high highs and super low lows?
Yes. And it's funny that I didn't even mention that now that I'm thinking about what I just said, because the high highs are wonderful. It's definitely like a manic euphoria type of feeling. For me, there wasn't, because everybody's different. Everyone experiences life differently. And everybody, if you do live with a mental illness, we all don't have the same exact symptoms. I've read and I've heard that a lot of people cycle very rapidly. But for me, it was normally like a cycling from being like very sad for a while to kind of then all of a sudden one day waking up and it was like a euphoria and a mania. And I don't know that everybody experiences that bipolar symptoms that way. I feel like sometimes people might kind of have those same emotions within like the same hour. But yeah, so the mania was definitely, you know, it was a fun thing, but I can look back now, older and wiser, and know how unhealthy it was. But that's a big struggle for, I think it was for me, and I think probably for a lot of other people, that when you're first diagnosed and you want to get the help, and you know, depending on, you know, if medication is the right tool for you to use, which for me it was, that the you know, that high goes away, and it's something that is like you almost love about the disease. That sounds a little weird, but so that high does go away.
It goes away. So it's like the best part in a sense of having bipolar disorder is the super high. But then go ahead.
Sorry. Yeah, no, I was going to say, well, for me, that was a nice part of it. And I think the highs are probably maybe not the best part for everybody, but for me, that was something that was a good part of it at the time. So I thought, and once I started a medication, medication therapy, that it goes away and you miss it. And I've heard from some others that there is a lot of hesitancy for people to stay on medication, or maybe it's one of the reasons they stop their medication because they miss that part and they feel like they're connected to that part. And they felt like that was the real part of them that is now like dulled. Whereas like, I can look back on that now older, like I said, like older and wiser, and see that wasn't actually me. That high feeling, that euphoria, that was, you know, the chemicals working incorrectly in my brain, and not that's how life should be every day, all day.
Yeah, it makes so much sense and is so relatable to myself with OCD. You know, like a lot of times, if it's working in my favor, like for cleaning my room, washing dishes, you know, any of those kinds of things,
yeah.
It's great, even if I can tell I'm kind of in that zone. You know, I know the OCD is activated, but as soon as it's triggered by some intrusive thought, that's when I'm like, frick, man, like this sucks. I don't want this.
Yeah.
But yep. You can't pick and choose how these things operate in your brain. So I definitely understand that. Or at least from my own perspective, I can relate to that.
Yeah, sure.
I'm interested to know, because you said you were officially diagnosed around 21 or 22 years old. What was your path to seeking out professional help? Because that being a little bit of time ago, this was talked about less, you know, when you were 21, 22. So I imagine there was like stigma that you were probably struggling with, and yet you still broke through and went and sought out professional help. I'm interested to hear what drove you to do that and how you went about it.
Yeah, that's like it's an interesting way that you set that up, because I think that until I got help and realized, I didn't understand that there was a stigma because I wasn't part of that group. The stigma came later. So for me, the path to help was, you know, there was just like a lot of risky behaviors going on and, you know, surrounding myself with, you know, not the right support system, or not even like the right group of friends, so to say. And to be honest, it was really an old friend of mine who knew me as a kid, and we had reconnected, just, you know, total coincidence. We ran into each other and connected, and after hanging out with her just a few times, like she actually noticed that something was off, noticed my behavior, and she suggested that I probably seek some help to kind of, you know, talk to someone, and that maybe, you know, that there might be some type of mental illness happening. And I trusted her. And I also, it was kind of that first aha moment of, oh, wait a minute, this isn't just me. I like, these feelings aren't normal. This behavior isn't normal. Like, there might actually be something going on causing this stuff. Mm. And so I listened and I went and I talked to the therapist and soon saw a doctor afterward. And when they diagnosed me, I felt the biggest sense of relief, because to me, it validated that, okay, there's not something like really weird about me. This isn't my personality. This is something that is, you know, a health issue. Mm-hmm. So I felt really good. I was really excited to find out that there was an explanation for what was happening and that I could potentially, you know, get better and life didn't have to be like this. And you know, the stigma came later, that now that I was a part of that group and identified with that group, then I learned all about what the stigma was and, you know, the thoughts that people had toward people that live with mental illness.
Mm. That's really interesting. And it makes a lot of sense. And, you know, you shared a couple things there that I think are really important to point out. We talk a lot about the importance of speaking truth into somebody else's life on this show, in the sense of when you spend time and are connected with somebody and really like earn their trust and you notice something's up, you've allowed yourself to be in a position to speak up like your friend did and share mm-hmm. that, hey, like maybe something's going on there. And yeah. I think there's something to be said about how, you know, if you didn't really know her that well, you mm-hmm. probably would have been, yeah, all right, whatever, B. Like, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Wow, that's not nice to say. What are you yeah. talking about?
Yeah, like but because she like earned your trust, you were able to mm-hmm. she was able to speak into your life and you were able to hear that, which is so powerful. I really love that. And you said something else. I'm drawing a blank on what it is now. What you shared was really, really great. I'll say that.
thanks.
Absolutely. And you know, when it comes to you now identifying with this group of people who have mental health disorders, and then mm-hmm. you started to experience this stigma, I think that that's so relatable, because for so long myself, never thought of seeking out professional help for what was going on in my head, just kind of lived with it, didn't know there was a stigma around any of that stuff. And then as soon as I started to get immersed myself into this line of work, you really do start to see that, wow, there are stigmas. And what uh-huh. one thing I've noticed is that because I'm so open to talking about this kind of thing, and, you know, I host a podcast and everything, a lot of times I can actually forget that there's stigmas because I'm yeah. surrounded with people who are vulnerable and willing to talk about it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think probably too, like, if you're open to say, like, I'm 44 years old, and are you comfortable? Like, what is your age? Are you comfortable sharing that?
Oh, totally. Yeah. I'm 24.
Yeah. So we're two totally different generations, really. Right. Mm. Growing up, you know, people didn't talk about mental health. They didn't talk about it, good, bad, or otherwise. What we saw was we watched Law and Order, and we saw that almost all the cases, somebody was criminally insane. And or they were getting sent to a hospital, or they killed someone or murdered someone because they had, you know, XYZ mental illness. Mm-hmm. And there wasn't, you know, people joked about shrinks. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? I know this is a recording, but I'm putting the air quotes up.
Yeah.
That it's funny because, like, think about it. Like, when's the last time you heard somebody use the phrase shrink?
Like, yeah.
And me growing up, and when I was in my teens and 20s, like, that word was used a lot because therapy was not something that people talked about openly. Yeah. So it was a different time, and it almost like this, there was such a stigma, but the stigma, it was so taboo. Like, you just didn't talk about that. And I still run into some circles, or, you know, some, there are some of that does still exist, that people are very uncomfortable and they don't talk about it. Mm. But things have just changed so much in the last, you know, five, 10 years, but, you know, and I feel like they're rapidly changing now because of, you know, everyone like living through a pandemic and quarantine life. And it's making, you know, a lot of people, you know, prioritize mental health, and those conversations are being had more now than ever. Whereas, you know, 20 years ago, the phrase mental health, to hear it out of someone else's mouth, I don't know that maybe once a year, once every other, like once every 2 years, it was not talked about. So, yeah, there's definitely, you know, I'm not surprised at all to hear that, like you had just said, that like you forget that there's a stigma. And I love that. I love that you forget that there's a stigma out there and that you're so comfortable talking about it. Cause when I was your age, it was not like that. So yeah, we're definitely on this, you know, path to crush stigma. And I'm just really glad that things have changed so much. I'd love to see that, you know, this is definitely a topic that is getting the time and space it deserves.
Yeah, I completely agree. That's so true. And, you know, it has me curious for yourself, has having bipolar disorder, you know, it affects your personal life to an extent, I'm sure, but yeah. I assume there's also impacts in your professional life too. And as you got diagnosed, that's like right when you're getting into the world of business. You know?
Yeah. It's funny. So when I was diagnosed, before I was diagnosed, so I did have a college degree and, I was not using it. And, you know, I just want to be very careful about, what I'm about to say. We'll say that I was working in a field that is a very respectable field and a great way to earn a living. But for me, it was not where I was supposed to be. And, so once I was diagnosed and had that sense of, wow, this is the explanation and I'm not like this and all these crazy things I'm doing and feeling and experiencing, you know, started getting better. The first thing I did was I applied to grad school because I was definitely starting to feel like, okay, I need to start thinking about my future now. And I need to, you know, get back to, being on a path toward a professional career that I'm interested in and not just, getting by doing something that I made a lot of money at. But anyhow, so I went to grad school and then right from grad school started my professional career. And I didn't start my professional career until my late 20s. Which was okay because, you know, my path was different, very different than other people's path and experiences. I kind of had to go through what I went through in my 20s in order to get to where I am today. So I would definitely say that, you know, I struggled a bit. Some of my early professional jobs, there were definitely uncomfortable situations. There were, you know, people didn't know and I didn't tell them because it wasn't something that was talked about. And, you know, there were jokes that were made that they didn't realize I was the subject of their joke. There, you know, were, things about, you know, mental hospitals or crazy pills or, you know, comments about needing medication. And all along, nobody knew, and they weren't commenting about me. It was just like the, you know, it was acceptable and normal to make jokes like that. So it was tough. And that was back in a time where, you know, I didn't really say anything or speak up. And I kind of finally did at the end of one job that, you know, I knew I wasn't going to be in the job much longer anyhow. And I kind of finally did speak up and some people were supportive, but a lot of others, it just kind of turned them away. Yeah, but I would definitely say that, you know, the role that I'm currently in and the organization that I currently work for, you know, is such a wonderful place to work, diversity and inclusion and acceptance and bringing your whole self to work is super important to the organization that I currently work for. And, you know, it even prompted me to recently come out. And I use the phrase come out because it really is like a coming out, and shared with my coworkers and my team, and then more broadly across, you know, the organization that I live with mental illness, and that, you know, I have challenges, and some people had worked with me for 10, 12 years and had no idea. But yeah, it was a very different experience than it had been up until that point at some previous jobs that I worked at. And I think it's also, I think it has to do with, you know, choosing the right organization that is supportive. But it also has to do with the times are changing, right? So like kind of alluding back to what I was talking with you earlier, that, you know, we grew up in different times. And I definitely feel like the last 5-10 years have really helped to make it something, like I said, that we talk about and that we can talk about to our employers. And our employers are, you know, not just legally required to help give us the support that we need if we're, you know, have any type of disability, invisible or not, but they want to, right? Like there's good people out there that are willing to support you and talk to you and make things, you know, as best as they can for you.
Man, so much there, so much good. You know, I'm just picturing people making a joke about mental health or needing to take medication. Now you're so right. The times have changed so drastically that, you know, back then in one of your first jobs, when they were making those jokes, you know, the majority of the people would be getting in on that joke. Right. But nowadays,
right,
if somebody made a joke like that, the majority of people would be like, yo, dude, what the heck? That's so messed up. You know, it's completely, it's awesome. Yes. I want to say, go you. Like, thank you so much for speaking up and sharing it across your organization, across, you know, even as small as your team and beyond that, of course. That's huge. And I can only imagine that it's opened up the opportunity, or it's made people feel like they're allowed to share those sorts of things.
Yes, well, it has. It has. I mean, look, I can't believe when I shared my story at work, I was asked and like kind of tapped by, you know, like our public relations team to share my story to help promote hiring people who have diverse abilities. And of course I want to do. And being included in that prompted so many coworkers, most of whom I didn't know, to reach out to me to, whether it was just thank me for sharing my story because they know someone who, you know, has an invisible disability and they just, you know, wanted to thank me for sharing my story, or people who actually have themselves an invisible disability, specifically a mental illness, that, you know, they just, it was so great for them to hear and know that they're not alone. And then there were another group of people that came to me because they have a mental illness and they don't tell anyone at work about it. And they came to me for help and guidance. And I didn't expect that, to be honest. I didn't expect for all of those people to reach out to me to show support, ask for guidance, et cetera, that it was so overwhelming. And it just kind of reinforced that I made the right decision to do so.
Yeah, it's so good, man. That's like what vulnerability is all about. That's a message that we constantly share on here, is that when we're able to open up and share a bit about what we've gone through or a bit about who we are, it allows people to feel like they have permission to do the same. You know, I've shared my story many times with different people and on this show of how the first time I really opened up about my anxiety was to a now ex-girlfriend back in college. And the reason I went out and sought out professional help was because in that conversation with her, she said, hey, like I actually went to a psychiatrist years ago and I still see that psychiatrist and I'm on medication now and it helps a lot. And I left that conversation being like, holy cow, like it's not weird for me to go and see a professional, you know? So I think that your ability or your willingness to share what you live with and what you show up to work with as well, it has impacted probably more people than you even know. You know, I think my mom always tells me, because my mom's my biggest supporter, she's always like, you know, Tommy, there are so many people who hear your message that don't reach out, but it's still impacting, you know, like just imagine how many people read the piece about you at your work that haven't reached out to you, but that potentially changed their lives, you know?
Yeah.
Crazy. Yeah.
I know, it's just so amazing. I mean, yeah, I still don't believe it sometimes. But it's like, I'm not going to lie. Like I feel like I guess I didn't realize that by sharing my story, like how good it would make me feel, because helping all these people, like I don't know what I thought, to be honest. Like when I first decided to share my story like that so publicly, I guess I wanted to promote change, but I didn't realize that me as an individual was going to make that kind of difference, if that makes sense. Like I felt like I was helping the cause to end the stigma and to normalize talking about mental health and mental illness, that I was contributing to a larger type of change that I wanted to see happen, versus thinking that like me as an individual could make any type of impact. So that kind of blew me away. I think that somehow, like now I'm laughing about it, I thought that sharing my personal individual story was going to be in some way anonymously helping to end stigma. And it was like, that's awesome. My gosh, what are all the, cause it's just funny. Cause I guess like my intentions weren't to get all that personal attention, if that makes sense. It's really great. And I think that like one of the other things, like kind of to go a little off topic and, you know, hey, but I'm bipolar and you gotta be prepared for
we're this. Going with it. Let's go.
Right? You just gotta go with it. Sometimes I jump around and, but yeah, like I also recently started, volunteering, I guess it was about 2 years ago now, a year and a half. I don't know. I'm quarantine brain. it was the fall before quarantine. So what's that? A year and a half ago. I started to volunteer with NAMI, the local chapter, and the National Alliance for Mental Illness. And, you know, that really changed me too, because it felt great to be able to spend my time and energy helping others who live with mental illness and needed the support that an organization like NAMI gives. But the one thing that like I didn't realize until I started volunteering was that a lot of the volunteers also live with a mental illness. And by volunteering and being active with them and helping with events or planning committees or whatever it might be, that for the first time in my life, I was actually like in working teams with people just like me, in the sense that they live with a mental illness. And it was such a like strange yet beautiful experience to like, for the first time, that everybody in the room has a mental illness, but you're not in that room together because of your mental illness. You're in that room together because you're all volunteering your time and you want to do something good. And it just so happens that we're helping the community, our community, and folks who, you know, have mental illness and need the support of the organization. So that was a pretty cool byproduct of volunteering with them. And I still volunteer with them. It's a little different now because of, you know, the pandemic, and events really aren't what they are or what they were, you know, prior, But yeah, I think like to circle back there, why my brain jumped there was because I was talking about the kind of like that happy byproduct of sharing my story. And then it reminded me of the happy byproduct that I wasn't expecting, but got from volunteering with NAMI.
Mm. Man, that's so good. I love it. I love it. And I want to say, in the nature of vulnerability, I don't know if Zoom changed how their meetings worked, but I've been told that we have 3 minutes left in our meeting time, unless I want to upgrade to a different Zoom. I don't know. So with that being, I didn't think that that happened when it was only two people. So this
might, sorry.
But either way, Christine, as we're wrapping up, first of all, thank you so much for everything that you've shared. You know, one thing that I would love if you could share briefly, you mentioned that you still obviously have bipolar disorder, but you've learned mm-hmm. different ways to be able to live with it better or more efficiently or effectively. Can you share like what two of those things are before we go?
Sure. I think that the one thing that I learned is that I need to talk about my feelings more. So rather than, you know, something happens or someone says something and I react to it with, you know, like maybe like someone says something and it really bothers me and I react by, you know, being defensive back, that it's better for me to talk about my feelings. So like, rather than kind of snap back, so to say, to kind of like, wow, well, that was kind of hurtful, or like, wow, you know, I don't know what to say right now. Like to kind of, if I don't always have control of like stopping and thinking about what I'm going to say. So I've just kind of changed what comes out of my mouth, which is not, you know, oh, you hurt me, I'm going to hurt you back. You hurt me. Wow. Do you realize how hurtful that was, what you just said? Like and that totally changes the tone of the conversation and the interaction. So I think that, you know, speaking more about, you know, the like kind of just trying to be a little bit more human and kind. And if somebody is not human and not feeling very kind toward me, to kind of dig a little deeper, because is that what they meant? Maybe it's not even what they meant. And if we can kind of just talk through it a little bit and talk through the feelings part of it, and it helps to kind of like push aside the misunderstandings. Yeah. So that's a good tool that I have. And and I think what the other tool is to like, I make time to do things that make me feel good. So I make sure that I'm focusing on myself. And if I want to watch TV 2 hours a day, because that's what makes me relax, then that's what I'm going to do. If, you know, I can't stand listening to the dog bark or the kids fight, then I should probably just walk upstairs and find something to do upstairs. It's kind of like remove myself from the situation, do things that make me, you know, that allow me to relax and feel good, so that I can like rejoin the chaos and not let it get to me.
That's so good. I think that's so relatable and useful for so many people. I see that we have less than a minute. So I hate to rush the end of this, but Christine, thank you so much. You've been amazing. Yeah.
Thank you so much. This is such a great opportunity. This is great. I'm glad to have this conversation, and I'm glad. Thank you for having this conversation and putting it out there.
Thank you, Christine. Same right back to you. I really appreciate it. You take care.
You too. Thank you.
Thank you all so much for listening to the show. Christine is amazing. I really hope that this has been an eye-opening episode for all of you. And, you know, maybe you found somebody who you can relate to if you're somebody who struggles or lives with bipolar disorder. And if you don't, like myself, maybe you learned something today. And if you think that this episode would help other people learn something too, be sure to share it with them. Share it on social media and be sure to hit that subscribe button on Apple Podcasts or, you know, whatever platform that you're listening to this on, so you're notified every single week when a new episode comes out. Also, if you're feeling like leaving a review, that really helps with other people who are checking out this show and are trying to figure out how legit it is. So you can help this show look as legit as I hope you believe it is, because I believe it's legit. I believe really important things are talked about on this show, and I'm so grateful that you spend your valuable time with me. Y'all rock, and I love y'all. Hope you have an amazing week. Take care.